Welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Techno Wizard. It is Tuesday, August 9th, 12:55 p.m. 2022. And today, I really want to get back into visualizing a better world, you know. Yesterday, I went to a great, another housing community committee type of thing with community movement builders. I think I mentioned the first time I went about 2 weeks or so ago, and and today, you know, we met up again to further talk about, you know, the problems that people want to solve, and talking about the ideated some ideal solutions, ideal goals that we want to strive for. And you know, I love that stuff. So I was going ham in there. I was like, hey, we can do this, we can try that, you know. So that was very, very fun, very exhilarating. So I want to get back into it. I want to share, you know, not exactly what we talked about. That's, you know, that's up to them. But I do want to, it did inspire me once again to get into like visualizing kind of utopian ideas. And the reason why it's so important again was, as I will continue to mention, and I say this mostly for myself too, is because, you know, prior or early on in my own ambitious career, I kind of got jaded from the idea of utopia, right? Because whenever you have any sort of creative or unique idea of the future, people are quick to shoot you down. Like, oh, that's a utopia. It's utopia. It's not going to work. There's no perfection. Blah, 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 blah. Right? And that was very frustrating. But even some part of me still internalized that, right? Because unfortunately, it is true that one person's utopia is another person's, you know, hell or something like that, right? You kind of hear that sometimes. And you see that especially with things like, you know, let's say white supremacists who are like, yeah, our utopia is, you know, a world where there's just white people and everybody else is either not existent or, you know, lesser than. So it's with that in mind that I became like more jaded about the idea of utopia. And so whenever I did, you know, paint my own pictures and share my ideas of the future, I was quick to say, oh, it's not a utopia, right? There's going to be its own set of problems, but the idea is that it's going to be, you know, kind of better problems, right? than what we have today. And I still do stand by that, right? I personally, for me, whenever I think of a better future, I'm always thinking of better problems to be solving, right? Like, there's always going to be problems. We're never going to fix everything. We're never going to figure out everything, most likely not. So long as we are, you know, more tool, you know, just singular individuals or individuals who cannot simply grasp all that there is, then we will always have some sort of problems or ignorance or whatever. However, there is a huge difference between, you know, having to worry about, you know, eating on a regular basis versus having to worry about, you know, what kind of career you want to have, right? Like, there's a huge difference between, you know, let's say, you know, being able to figure out how to chase your passions, right? How to achieve your wildest dreams versus how to get past depression and not, you know, kill yourself or something. Like, these are huge differences, right? And so when we're building a better future, I think it's important to think about and to talk about the fact that it's more about a better set of problems that most people are going to be dealing with. And ideally, everybody's going to be dealing with. Not like you want them to deal with these certain problems, but like, ideally, nobody's going to be dealing with these really basic and really terrible problems that we have today, right? Hopefully, in a better world, nobody will be dealing with, you know, facing having to think about humans going extinct due to climate change, or having to think about, you know, missing out on rent and then becoming homeless. No one has to think about, you know, eating the wrong food and getting cancer or something. You know, we can figure out how to solve those problems. And then, of course, there's going to be new problems to solve. But hopefully those won't be on the same level as the ones we have today. So, yes, all that being said, I do want to paint some utopian pictures. And my definition of utopia is not merely some quote-unquote perfect society, whatever that is, but a better society. And I'm coming back around to using the word utopia to describe this because there was a great YouTube video I watched which was talking about the history of utopia and how it was never necessarily intended to be this idea of a perfect society, right? It was just a better society. Even when you think of like the Jetsons, right? That's a very utopian view, but they still had their own sets of problems, their own everyday human problems, right? And so what it does is it allows people to dream, to hope, to imagine a better future, and therefore to want to build that future, right? You hear this all the time in the space of futurism, or even just like, you know, why so many people are so negative today, or, you know, the fact that so many people, whether it's especially younger people, but also older people, you know, kind of treat the future or the current day with a sense of foreboding, a sense of doomerism, or even a sense of, you know, detached, you know, irony and humor, where they try to use this. This is especially with the younger folks, myself or younger age, where we often try to use humor to try and detach ourselves. It's like, oh yeah, it's a funny situation. You make memes about everything, you know, and it's in some way it's a coping mechanism. But in other ways, it's a bad coping mechanism, right? It's a way of kind of ignoring the problem, or at least, you know, giving up, thinking that the only thing we can do is just joke and make funs, make hee-haws about the end of the world. But it's a big reason. I'm not gonna say mostly, you know, there's plenty of other reasons, but I think a big reason why people do this is because we don't have a utopian view of the future anymore. We don't have utopian, you know, visions to ascribe to strive for. And those old utopian visions, right, don't serve us anymore, because now we've learned that many of those utopian visions were not just unrealistic. That's not really, you know, people don't really care about unrealistic per se. What we realize is that we don't actually want that anymore. We don't actually want that. Many of us, especially those of us who have become knowledgeable about, you know, ecology and, you know, the role of capitalism in destroying nature and humans, you know, we've begun to realize that a better future is not necessarily one where you have these super tall buildings in the sky and all this other stuff, but one where you feel one with nature, right? Where there's trees all around you, where you're touching grass every day, and, you know, you still have some cool technologies, right? But it's the technology is not separate from nature. It's not far and above nature. It's not some aloof, you know, sleek white metal glass, you know, thing that's its own thing away from the earth, right? Many of us, when we think about the future, or at least an ideal future that we want to have, we think about one where we can, you know, go and enjoy nature more, right? Where we can travel wherever we want, where we can meet people who we want, where we can build cool projects together, even when where we can go to space, but that space exploration does not come at the cost of, you know, real world problems and resources. So yeah, that's why I want to get into this. So all this preamble, but I do think it is necessary. Get that context. And sorry if I sound a little winded. I was dancing very vigorously. they doing work over there. Dang it. Not my favorite spot too. At least to pass by. Let me see how close I can get before it gets too loud. Because at least I can turn off when I get around the corner. But anyways, never mind. Never mind. They're coming up here. It's already loud. I'm just going to go around. But yeah, so let's think about this better future, right? again, there's always whole different levels I can start with. I'm just going to put a whole bunch, because every time I try to, you know, organize myself here, I end up going far off track on just one thing and never really touch everything else or forget about the other. So let me just push a bunch of ideas out, and then let's see which I land on in terms of what I want to focus on some more, what I want to drill down into. So I think some exciting ideas of the future is, you know, a lot of them are focused around community, right? And what that means, I think I mentioned, what, two episodes ago, is building actual community where you can walk outside and you know who, everywhere you look, you know who lives there, right? When you're looking in house, you know who lives there, you know their name, you know what their likes are, you know what their dislikes are, you know where they work, you know, all this other stuff. And it's not about being a small town. It's not about being nosy or anything like that. It's simply because that's your friend, right? Whenever we think about community, in an ideal future, a community is simply a group of friends, right? And yes, some of those friends can be your family members, but a lot of them probably won't be. And that's, a lot of them probably shouldn't be. Should be, you know, even bigger than your family members. But I think that's a huge point to focus on, is how do we build a future where community actually means community, right? Where you walk around and you know the people there, you like the people there, you do work with them, you know, spend time with them on your leisure time, you know, and all this other stuff, right? How do we build that world together? I think one part of that is, like I always say, the physical environment, right? Instead of having single family housing everywhere, right, where each house is separated, and you have this big old yard that most people rarely ever use, right? Instead, I know this is going to be crazy, but just go with me here. What if you lived on some type of compound, for instance, right, where you only have maybe one or two rooms to yourself, right? Your private room, maybe a bathroom or something like that, or a study room or something. One to three rooms, generally, right? So it's not even an actual house. It's just a collection of rooms that are themselves isolated and allows you to have some private time and some, you know, quiet time and things like that. But you can easily just walk outside and then boom, you're in a common space with other people, right? And there probably is going to be some sort of transition, right? So it's not immediately outside of your door. Maybe, you know, there's some a kind of oasis of trees or water features or a garden or whatever that you want to be outside of your, you know, private space, right? Directly outside of that private space. So yes, you can call it a yard, but it's one that's not just grass. It's whatever you feel like actually helps you be grounded, right? Because an important thing to remember is that yes, we need privacy, but we also need transition from privacy into public life, right? From, like, as we change mind states, like, and I've started to learn more about this myself as I began driving more, because a lot of people, you know, talked about how they like, you know, their cars because it gives them some privacy and some ability to, you know, transition from work to home, you know, kind of mindset, right? So what if we can replicate this, but for your entire living situation, right? Or even working situation. So you have this private area, then you have a transitionary area. And that transitionary area is customized for you, right? So if you don't want a yard with a bunch of grass, then you don't need that. You can have trees, you can have water features, you can even have like some sort of technological, you know, structure or whatever, I don't know. But something that personally kind of speaks to you and allows you to change your mind state from, okay, I'm going to my private space and now I want to go into the public, I want to talk with other people and all this other stuff, right? So yeah, you go through this transitionary space. It's not super big, but it's you know, qualitative for you, right? And then once you get out of that, now you have a public space and you see a bunch of other people walking around and playing and stuff like that. So they might be, you know, depending on your own kind of comfort level and interest, there's like a playground outside your transitionary space and things like that. There could be, you know, a walking path. You could even go right into like some sort of nature preserve that has been rewilded, right? Or if you really, you know, love urban living, it could just be, you know, the city. So you just walk outside into the city. So yeah, this space, you know, this common space is now connected to other people's private spaces and transitionary spaces. So every time people want to go anywhere, you see them, you know, as they come out and go and prepare to go to wherever they want to go, right? And the entire kind of vicinity is extremely walkable. So nobody even has a car. Nobody wants a car, right? Because you can get from point A to point B with like a 5-minute walk, right? If you want to go to the store, right? If you want to go to the library, if you want to, you know, go to the gym, even if you want to go to work or wherever you want to go, it's within 5 to 10 minute walk. And an easy walk at that, not like some perilous side of the road walk. No, a beautiful stroll, right, through, you know, a tree, you know, tree-lined pathway, and or an urban, you know, pathway. There's still some trees there because trees are important. But either way, it's an easy, delightful stroll, pretty much anywhere you want to go, right? And if it's further away, or if it's like a big box store, because we might still need those for some reason or another, like a warehouse where you store big things or a lot of resources or whatever, then you can probably get on some public transit, right? Or you can bike there, right? And there's a thing I was learning about today called I forgot what it's called. It's a kind of a German word or something like that, but essentially a bike with a big, you know, kind of carrier in front of it. And people use this in, I think it was Norway or something like that. Sorry, people messaging me. to carry their kids while they're biking, or carry their groceries, or carry their furniture, or things like that, right? Maybe you can't put a whole couch on here, but you can put a good amount of things in this carrier, right? And if you do, you know, actually do need something to move something large, like a fridge or something, or a couch, then you can either rent a large vehicle, or better yet, do a freaking drone. Get a drone to just pick it up and then boom, put it right down into your vicinity. So the point here, once again, is that you're living in a space where you do have your privacy, right? But at the same time, you also have ready access to the community around you, right? And there's, most importantly, there's going to be public spaces for people to meet, right? So you might be asking, okay, what am I doing here? Wait 1 second. Okay, sorry. They're really getting busy with this road. Like, it's funny, a few months ago, or maybe it was a year ago, I don't know, they treated the roads, right? They basically repainted it so it looks a little bit better, but they didn't actually fix the roads. So still a whole bunch of potholes and cracks everywhere and stuff like that. So now they're finally actually, you know, repaving the roads. Digging up that whole road there and going to repave it, I guess. But anyways, I forgot where I was at. So you have this sense of community. You have your privacy space, transitionary space. So you have a public area, commons area, right? An important thing here is that, what do you do, right? Because the big thing is people will say, oh, if I want to watch TV or do this or that and the other, what people don't realize is that a huge part of our behaviors, right, are largely influenced by what's available to us. So even those like me who are very insular, you know, I'm always losing my words, goodness. introverted people, goodness, there we go. Even people, folks like me that are very introverted, right? We still want that social connection, right? We still want that social, relationships and to have these social experiences. But, like, I don't feel comfortable going to a party in order to do that, right? And it feels like the only way I can really have some sort of real social experience today nowadays. Well, before COVID, rather, right? Is to go to a party or a bar, you know, a club or a bar, something like that, right? It's just extremely social, extremely, you know, out there. It's just a lot of talking, a lot of people, very noisy, and that's not really something that excites me, right? Every now and then, I might want to check it out, but for the most part, I don't really want to do that, right? Luckily, nowadays, you know, we started doing hiking, so I have, like, a little group of friends and siblings and stuff like that, and every weekend we go hiking together, and that's very, very nice, right? But the point here is that I wasn't able to do that before because I didn't have a car. I didn't have a way to get from point A to point B, you know, especially with a lot of people. But if you live in the space in which you have actual common areas, and by the commons, what we mean here is that the majority of the space is dedicated to activities in which anybody can partake in, right? And that can be very diverse things. It could be something like a nature preserve, right? Or it can also be something like a theater, right? And not just a movie theater, but, like, you know, the old-time Greek-Roman theaters or something like that, right? But it can also be a little game that you can hop into, right? When I was younger, we used to go, play football and you know, all this other stuff all the time. But we had to do it in somebody's yard, all right? And that's unfortunate because if you didn't know anybody, all right, or if you didn't yourself have a yard, then you couldn't play. Or you're going to play in the middle of the street, which is quite dangerous. Or you had to go and walk to some school and hope, you know, they allowed you to play in their court or their yard or something like that, right? So what if instead we have actual huge public parks, right? Like in Atlanta, we have Piedmont Park. And it's always active. There's always people there enjoying stuff together. What if there was more stuff like that, but in around pretty much every community, right? And by community, think about like a neighborhood that's actually neighborly, right? So a couple hundred houses or, you know, private spaces and things like that, situated around public common spaces. So there's going to be, parks, fields, nature preserves, walking trails, whatever, right? So now you have a lot of options in which you can spend time with other people. And because this is the freaking 21st century, we can indeed have a open space living room, right? An area where, or like in Korea, you know, you can have a computer bang, or whatever they call it, right? Where you have this digital space for you to play games together, kind of like a modern day arcade, right? So to all those people that think you can only play games in your home, you know, you know, they never played in an arcade before. And that includes myself, right? It wasn't until like 2 weeks ago that I got to play my first arcade game, like actual, you know, an actual arcade, like kind of booth thing, whatever you call them things, the little cabinets, because my job has one. And we were just having fun with that. And I was like, oh, wow, this is dope, right? So what if we have more of these, right? These public gaming areas, or these public, you know, digital spaces where you can indeed watch shows together, play games together and stuff like that in a common space, right? And who owns this technology and all this other stuff? Well, the neighborhood, the community, right? They can learn to upkeep it themselves. They can learn to repair it. They can learn to upgrade it. They can learn to, you know, bring new devices and software inside. So not only does this create a common space, right, where people can hang out together, but this also creates a skills incentive, right? An incentive and an outlet for people who do have these interests to upkeep different things to now practice those skills, right? Because think about it. For the most of human history, the biggest way that people learned skills was by doing it in their community, right? When you go and hunt, when you clean, when you cook, all this stuff, right? You do it inside the community with other people, right? But that translated into, later translated into things like apprenticeships, right? Where there's like a town smithy, you know, a town leather, you know, working area, textiles and all this other stuff. So people, kids and everything like that will learn how to do these skills. But we've lost that today. But the only skills you really learn how to do is to cook and clean in your house. And even that, most people don't do because, you know, oh, parents would do it, or if they're rich or something, like the maid would do it, or, you know, whatever, right? So it's not even a skill anymore, right? Nor is it something that many of us practice or have a chance to practice. And furthermore, because all the common areas are privatized pretty much, kids don't grow up seeing examples of things that they can get into. If they're curious about a thing, that means you have to be able to afford to buy that thing for them to, you know, be curious about, for them to express, you know, their curiosity and stuff like that, right? This is something that was big struggle for me growing up. If I was interested in computers, which I was, I was interested in, you know, inventing things and mechanics and all this other stuff. And my parents did not have the ability to give me these resources, right? And my school didn't either. My school didn't have no robotics program or anything like that, right? So how was I going to, you know, express this? I didn't. I ended up having to, you know, I did like a little tinkering here and there. If I found like a broken toy, I would try to fix it or mess around with it. But most of it was just like Legos that my uncle brought me, or, you know, just Googling or researching or reading stuff, right? It wasn't actually active very much. So, people still messaging. Might have to get back soon, unfortunately. But yeah, if we have these common areas, we actually have technology and all this other stuff in the space. That means kids can now look and say, oh, wow, you know, we're playing games together and stuff like that. What if the game breaks? Now the kids can learn how to repair it right there, right? Because it belongs to the community itself, so the community is going to be incentivized to fix, you know, these problems. And, you know, since nobody can take that away from them, right, they can fix it. Because a big problem what people don't realize is that, oh, you know, all these poor people, they move into an area and it becomes degraded and all this other stuff. But what people don't realize is what's actually happening is that area is getting redlined, right? Where the government, in our current, you know, society, there is no real public spaces. Most of it is either privatized or owned by the government, right? So if the government does not provide the resources in order to upkeep an area, it gets degraded. Right, let's take for trash, for instance. The government has to provide you trash cans. Yes, you can try to get your own, but the government has to go and pick it up, or some private organization has to go and pick it up. If you can't afford that private organization, or if the government doesn't come pick up the trash, then what happens? It just stays there. There's nowhere for you to put it, right? So this is why it's so important for every community to have some sort of recycling, you know, system within the community, right? Same thing for any sort of technology or any other common space, is for you have to give and enable the community to upkeep and maintain their own spaces, right? By doing so, then people can be more involved. People will want to be more involved. People will be empowered to be more involved. Whew. So yeah, unfortunately, I can't spend too much more time today. Got a lot of work to do. But as I'm walking back, I'll continue a little bit more. So yeah, you have these common spaces, these neighborhoods, where you actually care about everybody. You know who's in your neighborhood. You play with them, work with them, all this other stuff, on a regular basis. And yeah, you can, you know, work further afield from your neighborhood. But the idea here is that you wouldn't want to, and you wouldn't have to. What people don't realize today is that the main reason people work, you know, far afield from their living environment is because that's how the city is literally zoned, right? You have to do that, right? There's very little, or usually none, commercial facilities, right, within your neighborhood, within a walking distance, and sometimes even an easy driving distance within your neighborhood, right? So if we wants to work at some office space, some startup, some big building, you know, even a service center, you know, like a service job, like a, you know, restaurant or something like that. That might be, you know, 10, 20, 30, 45 minutes away of a drive, at least, right? And then traffic and all that other stuff. So instead, you can have these office spaces within every community where people can either, you know, well, some office spaces might be just for one company, and a company, I have some other ideas on that, we'll get to that in a second, where for either one company, one group working on a shared project, or it can even be like a WeWork, not exactly, you know, WeWork, but like, you know what I mean, like a shared office space. So you have different offices and people are working there for different jobs, right? So they're essentially working remotely, but in an office environment. And that allows them to focus and access to, you know, different work-related amenities or something like that. But it's all within walking distance of your home, right? So that allows you to, you know, work with the people that you live with and work in the same area that you live as well. Now, in terms of companies, I think we can still have companies, and we should still have companies, because we have had them before capitalism, right? Companies is not, you know, limited to capitalism. Companies is simply a group of people who work together to solve a common problem, right? And you organize under a name or something like that. You organize under a goal, under a mission value statement, stuff like that. The profit incentive for that company doesn't have to be there, right? You can simply measure your success as a company, as a group of people working to solve the problem, by whether or not the problem is solved, right? By actually measuring the metrics of the problem that you're actually solving. So if you say, you know, you want to connect the world together, well, how many people are you actually connecting? What is the quality of those connections? You know, measure that. Now, don't measure, you know, how much money you're raking in, because raking is a very poor proxy for the actual problems being solved, right? Because you could make more money causing more problems than you can actually solving problems and making people think and feel like they're connecting, but not actually connecting, right? We know this today. So it's kind of silly to for all those economists that say, oh yeah, money is, you know, the proxy for success or whatever. And like, no, whatever. So yeah, I think, these are just a few of these ideas so far, right? And what that looks like can vary, right? I said a compound, but what is really a compound? Like, it could be, you know, it could be a mid-rise building, right? With different apartments. And the transition area can be like a hallway that leads out, like a almost privatized hallway type of thing. Well, not really privatized, I'm sorry. More like semi-private, semi-public, you know, high hallway, right? So you know, you can customize it to the other people on that floor, or maybe even have, like, you know, your own hallway coming from your room or rooms or whatever. I don't know, there's different ways this can be manifested, but it can also be like a duplex or a triplex or a quadplex or whatever, right? It could be like a courtyard, right, where you have this these rooms surrounding an internal play space or something like that, or internal transitionary space. And then outside of that, you have, you know, the public area, right? It could be a freaking commie block, if you want to call it that. You know, those bigger, not quite high rises. Well, some of them are high rises, but they're connected to their own courtyard, to a larger courtyard, right? But the point here is that it doesn't have to look a certain way. Right, the point here is to get the idea down. If you have, you know, an area where you can do private things, then you can have some sort of transitionary area, then you can have a public space where all the people within that vicinity can spend time together very easily, and to get from one place to another, from one community to another, or from one sector of a city or whatever to another, you can have extremely walkable areas, bikeable areas, mass transit. And then cars are just like the last, you know, step. Not even the last step, but like they're the last resort, right? They go kind of around everything else. Because here's what's funny about cars. Two people say, oh, I like driving. Well, do you like driving in traffic? Do you like driving in a neighborhood or in a strolled where there's always people coming in and out, so you can't actually, you know, go at a good clip? You have to constantly be on the lookout, You know, do you like driving in an intersection, which is the highest rate of fatal accidents, right? Do you like driving and all this stuff? No. Most of us, when we say we like driving, we mean we like the feeling of being, you know, independent. And further, we like the feeling maybe of getting from some huge, from one place to another, you know, in a quick speed. We like driving fast, right? We like the fact that we can go from, you know, one city to another that's super far apart and we never would have thought we'd be able to get there. We like, you know, going cross country or whatever, right? So why don't we create cities and neighborhoods and things like that where all the streets, especially are the car, specifically the car-centered streets, or the car-centered roads, I should say, right? The places that are dedicated to cars are, in fact, dedicated to cars. And so that means, you know, they're straighter, right? So you can go faster. There's no speed limit, right? And in order for you to turn off or turn in to one of these roads or highways or whatever, it will, you have, you know, these huge signs and exit lanes that are more gradual and smooth, so it's easy to get on and off without, you know, having to worry about getting into an accident. Instead of intersections, you would simply design it so you wouldn't need an intersection, right? Or if you did, it would be more like a roundabout or something like that, which has been proven to be far more safe. So what people don't understand about walkability is that it is also better for driving. If you want a better driving experience, then you need a more walkable city where more people are comfortable walking, biking, and using mass transit. Because if more people do that, then less people are driving. Therefore, you have less traffic. Duh. So we need to do all these things, right? And a better world can look like something that's far more enjoyable for everyone. Now, some other points I want to get into, I won't be able to get into now, but in the future, is like, you know, how do you put in, you know, super futuristic ideas? Like, you know, like one of my things that I want to do is have a space elevator. So in every region or something like that, you have a space elevator you can get into and go all the way to space, or even go just to the atmosphere, and then take a train or a plane or something like that that goes across, you know, the atmosphere into another, you know, area super quickly. I want, you know, mechanical trees. I want to be able to live in a giant ass tree that's half organic and half mechanical, right? I want to be able to, you know, design my own living space that's completely custom. So if I want it to look like a castle, you can do that. If I want it to look like a space station, I can do that, right? I don't have to, you know, attend to some top-down settled permits and just like all the restrictions and limitations people have on how you can build and what you can build and stuff like that, right? Yes, some of them are there for a purpose, like safety and stuff like that, but if you can show that it's still safe for yourself and others in the environment, and at the same time as, you know, make it custom and beautiful and how you want it, then what's the harm there, right? I want to be able to drive unique things, right? What if I don't want to drive these boring ass, you know, beetle looking cars or something? Like I want to drive a goddamn spaceship on that looks like a spaceship, right? Or I want to drive, you know, hoverboard or, you know, all these different things, right? And that requires us to build infrastructure that is more open to these different things, and to create spaces where we can invent and you know, manufacture unique things, right? Unique items. Because a huge part of why we have so many things that are so cookie cutter is because we depend on mass production. We depend on this idea that everything has to be mass produced, everything has to be scalable and stuff like that. What if I don't want it to be scalable? What if I just want to build some really cool thing that me and my family uses? And if somebody copies it, fine, cool. But I don't want to have to worry. I want to build something, invent something without having to worry about is it scalable, right? Is it mass producible? And I say that as a person who has been thinking about how to mass produce something like hover cars and things like that, right? Like, I do think it is important to do that, but if we want to be more innovative as a people, then we can't always be thinking about, you know, mass producing and profitability and all this other stuff. Because a lot of the times, those aren't actually, you know, innovative, right? It actually takes you to dumb down. Maybe you're innovating in one way, but you're, you know, taking features away in others. So it's not, the innovation is not really a clear thing. It's not just, oh, it's better in all ways. No, it's not. It's better in some ways, but worse in other ways. And there's a balance that's being struck there. But what if I don't want to make that balance? What if I don't want to have to, you know, sacrifice, you know, my inventive vision just to make something scalable, right? That could be somebody else's job. Let me just invent something, right? And drive it, and or live in it, or play with it, or whatever. So, yeah, I want to do all these different things. And I think we can, in order for us to create a better world, it has to be one that's bottom up. Instead of all these top-down approaches where you have these rich people, you know, telling everybody else what to do, we have a bottom-up approach where the community itself says, okay, you know, is it safe for us? Is it, you know, blah, 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 and then, you know, go from there. If it's not safe or whatever and you still want to do it, let's see how we can get go into like an area that's already, you know, a wasteland or something like that. And then experiment. Let's have a zone where people can go to just experiment on things. Right? Maybe that might just be space. I don't know. But the point here is that, like, we need to think more about how we can enable and empower people to live the lives that they want to live, instead of just limiting and restricting and controlling people and saying, oh yeah, that's the necessary sacrifice for freedom. Like, no, I don't think that is. So yeah, I'll end it there. And as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching, or, you know, thinking with me at least. watching in your mind, imagining with me. And let me know what you think. You know, let me know if you agree, disagree, if you have other thoughts and whatever. If you listen to this today, tomorrow, 100 years, 1,000 years, a million, a trillion, whatever, hit me up. I'm out here somewhere. Have a great day and see you. Bye-bye.